today. We are welcoming you into the Daily Show with Sell Better. We do one of these every single day. If you scan the QR code on your screen or go to sellbetter.xyz, you can check out all of our upcoming episodes. Also, all of our shows are available in a podcast form. You can check out the Daily Sales Show on Spotify, Apple Music, your favorite podcast delivery service. But today we are leaping into how to be confidently persistent without pushing, scaring, terrifying your prospects away. I have quite literally two people that I turn to for my own questions on this subject. Megan Holsinger, Tom Alamo, welcome in. Thank you so, so much for being here. Woo! Oh, I like, oh, all the double hands. We got raise the roof. We got the double wave. We got a dance move. You love to see it. I wanted to quickly see who's in the room. Maria, can you help me out with that? See who's in the room as we're going through the agenda today. We are going to start off talking about five things a good check-in email needs to include. You know, just bringing them back to the table. The second thing we're going to go through is how to hold prospects accountable without seeming rude. I think that everyone has their own little definition of spicy. We're going to get into that. And then how to be everywhere, kind of a multi-channel approach, multi-touch approach, see what we're doing. If you haven't already taken that poll, we would love to see who's in the room, but I want to start us off just by kind of setting the scene. Before we jump into this persistence, I think that we should talk about where we are in the deal cycle and the definition of ghosting. And I think that gets mixed up a little bit. Meg, I know you feel passionate about this. Give us your thoughts. Where are we in the sales cycle? Set the stage.
I shall set the stage for you. So here's the thing. Everyone, so when you think of a prospect and when you think of people that you're engaging with, you have to, in order to actually be confidently persistent, to be able to show up to the table with confidence that is due to you, you have to have established a connection with the prospect. So what we're not going to talk about is cold outreach where you have just been sending like cold emails or cold calls or whatever form of communication you're using and they're not responding to you. Leslie and I always had this saying of like, you know, you can't be ghosted if you haven't been asked to the party yet, right? Like you gotta be able to like actually have been asked to dance, like have a little bit of a conversation with them. What we're going to talk about today and what Tom and I are going to give you guys some pointers on is once you've established that connection, once you're in the sales cycle where you've actually either, you know, established some value, you have had a conversation, you've exchanged back and forth, then they go silent. Then they ghost you. They do all the things. They just sort of disappear off of the earth. How do you remain persistent without being annoying?
So they have to be in the conversation with us. Yeah. It can't be a whole bunch of cold emails and cold calls that have never gone returned. There has to be a little bit of a back and forth happening. Let's jump in. Tom, talk to me about some things that we don't want to do when we're trying to get that person back to the table. What's like, I got a list up, but talk to me about like, what's one thing where you're like, absolutely, this is something I cannot ever get behind doing.
Yeah, I think what I try to avoid is our general, you know, niceties as you have on number four, right? So like saying the words touching base, hope you're doing well, following up, checking in, you know, very vague things like that. To me, that's fluff. And if I see that in my inbox, unless it's from someone that, you know, they're hoping I'm doing well because I told them about something like really challenging going on in my life personally, which is very few people that email me, I'm just going to delete. I'm not even going to open it. So if someone's seeing your email and that's like the first line of it, regardless of where you are in the sales cycle, you're already climbing uphill. So I want to just get straight to the point of what we're talking about. And then we're going to get to like, what do we actually do? But I don't want to include any of that. I don't want to, you know, to me, that also makes it seem like I'm being like the chasey sales rep, you know, and I'm almost like, I think sometimes we can have this kind of power dynamic in the reverse where we put our buyers on a pedestal and like, oh, I'm just your sales rep. Just checking in, just touching base, Megan, like hope you're doing well. Like would love to get a response from you. And, you know, we're not saying that consciously, but subconsciously, we're kind of like allowing our prospects to treat us poorly, like we wouldn't want our friend to treat us or someone else. So to me, I want to just get straight to the point of like, why am I reaching out? What am I checking in on specifically? What is the next step? What is going on? And how can I actually garner a response to either get closer to a yes or get closer to a no, if that's where we are in the deal cycle?
Megan, you used to talk to me about like putting yourself on the same rung on the ladder. Tell us about that. It was powerful.
Yeah. And I still use that to this day. And honestly, it's something I still tell myself to this day as I interact with anyone, really. I have this visualization of a ladder, right? Like you climb up a ladder. That's my impression of climbing up a ladder. But visualize like the rungs, the steps of the ladder, right? And so oftentimes, and I see this a lot, even with, you know, the CSMs that I manage or with AEs or whatever, when they start a conversation with a customer or prospect, they just end up putting themselves on this like bottom rung of the ladder. And they like, they're standing there looking up and assuming that the customer or the prospect are like holier than thou. And they have more confidence and all this stuff. And I'm telling you, it's going to ruin your mindset and actually will prevent you from being that persistent person that you're going to need to be down the road. And so instead, think of yourself coming in on that kind of like even playing field. It's going to actually boost your confidence. And not, I don't mean confidence like in an egotistical, I'm the best type of way, but you got to have some confidence. You got to have like two firm feet on the ground in order to have some of these conversations. So visualize that the next time you're having a conversation, don't be afraid of them. Don't be concerned. You're not gonna like, you know, upset them. I was just sort of half laughing when Tom was talking about like all the things not to do and saying like, you know, following up, touching base. Like I always think to myself, like, what's the first thing that I say to myself if someone says, hope you're doing well? My internal voice is like, really? Do you really though? Because I'm pretty sure you just wrote that and didn't even know that you wrote that. Think about that the next time you're sending an email. Think about being on the receiving end of it. How does that feel for you? And then go back and start over again.
Love. Let's jump into like, what are we including? So when this is, I'll set the stage first. When we're thinking about someone who either booked a call with us or maybe even further, I saw it, we're a good split of SDR, BDR function and AEs. Like that's the majority of people in the room here. So whether it's they've agreed to a call and they keep kicking the can or they don't show up and they reschedule or they said they're going to move forward and they're buying. And then all of a sudden they're not showing back up to the table. Let's talk about a few things that we're going to include in our email. I'll start off, Meg, with your list and then Tom will move to yours. I'll bring up a slide here. Pink. What do you got for us?
Yeah. So always start with a question or a statement. I actually prefer, I'll use either or. And it kind of depends on the scenario, but again, to last slide, skip the niceties, start with questions, start with something that demands attention. One of the things that I use, and this really goes into number two, attention grabber. This is the concept of using the I'm confused card. I was just actually having a conversation this morning with a person on my team who was having some trouble getting a customer to respond to them. And I gave them the pointer of using the I'm confused card. And what does that mean? So the I'm confused is you're starting with I'm confused. You mentioned X and here we are at Y. What's going on? What's happened? What's changed? Right? So that's a combo statement of an attention grabber. I'm confused. That's going to get somebody's attention. And then following it up with a question of what's happened, what's changed. The biggest piece of advice I can give anyone when you're doing this is if you're doing it in an email, just be short and to the point and state the facts. There's no need, again, to like include copious amounts of information. I would start with something that they're going to see really quick, and that's going to get them to pay attention to it. And usually that is some form of a question like, what happened? I've also used the statement like, I fear you may have fallen off the face of the earth. Only half kidding. Hope everything's fine. But we agreed that X, but we agreed that you would get back to me by whatever date. Like, be specific with what it was that they were supposed to do. So this is a big accountability thing. And then move on from there.
Awesome. Let's look at Tom's and then we'll go back and chat about some questions.
Yeah. So there's something that I want to say, if I can, Leslie, which is that I think, I actually think a lot of this can be handled up front.
Yes.
As an AE. So I'll make a note to these six things really quickly. But if you're finding that you're an AE and this happens to you all the time, it's probably not your prospects. It's probably you. And it's probably something that you're doing or not doing on your discovery calls, right? So you might not be asking some of the really more direct, challenging questions on that call, right? So you might be expecting in your head that they're going to follow up with you and they're going to get you those resources, but perhaps you didn't set next steps to get a call on the calendar. Perhaps you didn't pressure test with like a mutual action plan and the timelines. Perhaps you didn't ask about the buying process and who else needs to be involved and who else is impacted by what you're talking about, or does this need to go to procurement? Does this need security review? Does this need legal review, right? If all you're talking about is if you're building rapport for 15 minutes, asking some light questions and then saying, hey, I'll send you an email follow-up and we'll take it from there. You're going to get a really, really low response rate on that. So the best thing that you can do, I think, is more of a prevention than a cure. But alas, if you're already here, here's your cure based on what I've seen. I want to personalize the email based on things that have already been said. So I don't want to say, hey, Megan, checking in. I know we had a call last week. How does next Tuesday work for a call? I haven't heard from you. But I might want to say something like, hey, Megan, you know, you shared on our last call how important it was for you to onboard your new SDRs. In order to do that by the end of March, you noted that we had to get, you know, X part of the project done before March 1st. We're really coming close on that deadline. Do you like, can we find 5 minutes to chat later today or tomorrow? Right. Can I bring it to anything specifically that, you know, remind her or him of like that change, that challenge, that pain, that timeline that they already expressed to you? And can I use that as part of this? Right. I'm not creating urgency. I'm using the urgency they've already talked about. So I've kind of talked about that in points two or three or four. And then I like to like push them away a little bit. Right. The thing that I'm trying to get to is a yes or a no. So if it's a no, that's cool. I'll be, my feelings will be hurt for 30 seconds, but then I'll be glad that I'm not now wasting that time and mental energy and have to forecast with my boss this deal that'll never come in. So I'd say, hey, seems like this might've fallen off on the priority list. Is that true? You know, if so, it's all good. You're not going to hurt my feelings, but I just don't want to keep following up unnecessarily with you. Right. And I just want to give them an out. I want to give them an out through the sales cycle. And if they're really quick to take it, then cool. Probably wasn't a good fit. There probably wasn't pain, or I didn't do a good enough job in the first place. And then as number six says, as time goes on, I'll get really brief. I might just throw in an emoji or a meme or something like that if I want to be playful, or just like one word question mark. And then after that, I'm just going to give up on the deal.
Yeah. Great point. And I love, you're foreshadowing on kind of the next piece here too, with like the setting the stage and making sure that we're in the right spot. A question that I always like to ask myself every time I book a next step, a call, whatever it is, I'm always like, okay, why are they going to show up? And then is it that my head filling that in, or is it something they actually said to me? Let's see. There was a question here that says, what do you suggest when a prospect asked you for your availability and then ghosted you, from Saul?
I try very hard not to roll my eyes in the back of my head and yell profanities at the screen. All joking aside, that happens. It's annoying. I would, if a prospect had asked me for time, they booked the time. First of all, that's fantastic and shows interest, and that's an intent. So I'm going to hang on to that little sucker for dear life, right? So that's definitely, there was a moment in that person's day where they thought of me and they felt the need to talk to me so that I could share information. Let's capture that and make sure that we hang on to it in a way that we keep that momentum going. I would bet some money that it would be more likely that you would in fact reschedule that call if you reach back out to them. I think in that scenario, I'd probably shoot them either, if I had it, a text or give them a call, simply because if they're asking you for it and then they ghost you, there's gotta be some reason that they needed information. So I would go with that. Like, hey, you reached out, seems like you're looking for more information. I'd love to be able to give you time so we don't waste each other's time. Is there a better time that would work for you, since obviously this didn't? Maybe I wouldn't be that passive aggressive about it. but you get my point. I would hang on to that for dear life though, and not give up on it.
Yeah, I think, I agree with you. And then I'm seeing in the chat, you know, about like saw, I tried text, call, email, and LinkedIn. You know, and if we're trying all these tactics and all these different vehicles, they might've been interested a day, and then like a week or two later, maybe they already made a decision and something seriously changed. Yeah. And, you know, to me, I think there's something to be said around, okay, how much time and energy am I going to invest in someone that's not going to like give any sort of reciprocation back? You can take that to your personal lives if you choose to as well. But as a salesperson, I've only got so much time and energy, right? And so I want to be focusing those on the largest and most, you know, likely deals to close, and the ones that are offering some give and get there. So if I'm not getting any reciprocation, I hope I've got enough pipeline that I've got other deals that I'm working and can do that.
Yeah, couldn't agree with you more, literally. And that's also going to make you look desperate too. Like, if you're just trying to chase after something, I mean, who the heck knows at the end of the day why people do the things that they do, right? But we have things that we want to focus on that are going to get set. However, I would try, to the person's point in the Q&A, I would try to get a hold of that person. And then if none of those things happen, Tom, to your point, you know what? If they need you, they're going to come back, right? Mm-hmm. There was, you got to just let it go.
Release it. Release. I want to see how many times everyone, I'm going to launch a poll here. There we go. How many times are you following up before you walk away? Is it, you know, 1 to 2, 3 to 5? Are you like infinite? I will find you. You cannot stop me. Saul, you're just going to keep going after this person. Anyway, as people are filling in, I don't know. Tom, Megan, you want to chime in there? What do you have like a rule of thumb?
Gosh, it's so, I don't have a rule of thumb for like, that's like consistent in the sense that everything is so situational. Like it really depends on where I'm at in the sales cycle. It depends if this is a repeat buyer, if this is someone that I know, like I'm obviously going to pay more attention and follow up more. If this is something that is not, you know, if this isn't a good fit for my company and, or there's question marks around, like if it's a good fit, I'm not.
Depends.
I would say average 3 times, I think is a good rule of thumb. Make sure that you're doing it differently though. We haven't talked about video yet, and I know we're going to at some point.
Yes.
But I love video as a way to follow up.
Yeah, I'd say like I'm in the 5 to 7 camp, but that's not 5 to 7 emails 2 to 3 days apart. That might be like day one. I'm going to call them. I'm going to leave a voicemail and send an email. Then I'll wait a little bit. Then I might send a bump email. I might try a text. I might try a video. And then after that, like 5th or 6th one, I'm probably out.
I'm loving this chat. There's like so many things. And I think that it's like, if this company and this person has a really good fit for your product and you know you can help them, I mean, it might be an infinite. No, like we're going to find somebody. And Sean brings up multi-threading. Love it. Great way to tee us up for this next part of the conversation. I think a lot of times for me personally, I had a hard time like, how do I show up over and over and over again without seeming rude or too pushy or coming off like real super aggressive or salesy. And so I think like you guys, when we chatted about this before, we have some great tips here. I'm going to bring them up and then we can just kind of chat through. both of you said, like, knowing your audience, knowing who you're talking to, their personality. Meg, tell us a little bit about, like, what's an example of that?
Yeah, I'm glad you brought up the word personality, because I think that's a really important thing to keep in mind. Well, really, in any part of your life, but in sales in particular. So knowing your audience and who you're talking to is, I think, probably one of the most overlooked components of sales in general. I think people can get really lazy about it and make some pretty big assumptions, and then they end up, you know, not approaching them correctly. So knowing your audience as it relates to, you know, how you hold them accountable. One thing that I always like to do is when I'm talking to someone early on, maybe we've just had, you know, our first discovery call. First discovery. I believe discovery happens throughout the entire sales process, but that's a different webinar for a different time. when you've had your first discovery call, one of the things I've used in the past that has been helpful is, what type of follow-up works best for you? So I actually ask them what type of communication they prefer. And that is really helpful to, first of all, you're getting into their world. You're showing them that you're willing to, you know, have that sort of back and forth in a way that's comfortable for them. And then, you know, getting them, you can actually use it. This is going to come out wrong, but use it against them in some capacity down the road when they are ghosting you, because you can circle back to it by saying, hey, remember when we talked in the beginning and you mentioned that email was going to be the best form of communication for you? Well, look here, I'm in your inbox again, and I still haven't received a response. Can you help me out? Is there a different way that we could communicate so we could get to the result? Right. So it's about when we think about knowing the audience, the personality piece of how they feel, how they communicate, how they talk. Are they more direct? Are they more empathetic? Do they prefer short sentences? Do they want lengthy emails? You know, what is it? Is video a big thing for them? Sometimes I also will say, hey, I'm really into sending videos to check in. And so, like, is that something that you feel comfortable with? I'm more than happy to bring that up. So knowing your audience, there's so much you can get into in that component that I think people are often afraid to do because they're so rushed to get to, like, let me show you value, right? Or let me show you this. Let me show you all the things. Let me vomit up this demo for you, right? Like, let me do all this stuff. When in reality, getting to know them and building that rapport is going to go a long way and going to make, let's go back to the rung on the ladder, right? It's going to make it 10 times easier to meet them halfway as you continue that conversation, as that sales cycle continues.
Great point. And I think, like, I mean, I'm a broken record at this point. The managing expectations can solve 90% of our problems, personal, professional, all the things, like setting yourself up for success. And Tom, you were talking about earlier how that setting yourself up for the right questions and getting in there and making sure that you're asking all the right things ahead of time can help prevent the ghosting. You mentioned asking uncomfortable questions early. Talk to me a little bit about what that feels like, what that sounds like, kind of the position you have to put yourself in.
Yeah, I think, you know, the position I want to be in with someone on a call is that I want us to feel like we're on the same side of the table, right? I don't want it to feel adversarial. I don't want it to feel like I'm trying to manipulate you and persuade you or whatever, right? And so by doing that, like, I try to lower people's guard, you know, as early as I can into the call. So that might start off by just, you know, when I'm setting the pre-frame for the call, you know, saying, hey, look, at the end of this call, like, you know, this is what I actually say on calls. Say, hey, I consider myself a connector. I'm really proud of that. And so by the end of the call, if we think there might be something here, we're probably going to feel that. We could talk about the next step. If not, you know, I know a lot of other people that might be able to serve you better, and I'd love to make an intro to you and help you get, like, value either way. So if you could just tell me kind of how you're feeling, honestly, you're not going to hurt my feelings. I hope to give you value in some sort of way by the end of this 30-minute call, right? And so then I get people up then, they're like, yeah, I like what you do, but I'm really looking for this. Ooh, make an intro. I wasn't going to win that deal anyways, right? And then a lot of people are like, no, I like that. That, you know, that earns some trust there. And so I want to do that. If I think people are evaluating other competitors, I want to ask about that. Where are you in the buying process? Like, are you just starting? Are you at the very end? Have you done 90% of your research? Are you getting bids? Like, What's going to help this, right? If I'm at the end of the call and we've gone through a mutual action plan, you know, I might pressure test that a little bit and say, Leslie, you say that you want to get this thing going by like April 1st. We got a lot that we need to get done in a month. Like typically we're going to need this and this, and Megan's going to need to get involved, and John and Joe and these people. Like, this is what it'll typically look like. How does that, like, does that feel aligned with you? Like, do you feel like you can commit to that? You know, and I just want to have that conversation. I find that that'll feel uncomfortable to most salespeople, but I talk to a lot of salespeople. I listen to a lot of calls, do a lot of coaching. Most reps are too passive. They're not willing to ask those questions. There's a rare breed of salespeople that are maybe losing deals because they're too aggressive. But I think the pendulum is for most of us on the far end, where we don't want to disgruntle people. We don't want to be rude. And we can ask a direct question in a really kind way. Like, mm-hmm. Hey, I really, you're telling me this is really important to you, Leslie. I really want to help serve you, but I got to be upfront with you. I feel like our timeline's a little short here. We're like, we're really going to need to get this going. I'm going to need you to do A, B, or C. Do you think you can do that? Like, I'll do everything in my power to get this done, but I need you to do that too. Is that like, are we good there? Can we meet tomorrow to go through that? And so if I'm coming from a place of kindness, I think I am able to ask that more uncomfortable question. And you know what? If you say, no, I'm not willing to do all that, or no, this is not going to be the right thing, then cool. Yeah. I'm going to be able to take that. And again, I'm going to use my time working with prospects that are going to be a better fit for me.
One thing I'll add to that, and it's a variation, Tom, of what you just said, but I think it's really good. So I'm a big believer in the use of what I call assumptive statements or assumptive questions. So let me explain to you what I mean by that. You're conditioning a prospect, even a customer, early on in a sales cycle, right? Like, you have an opportunity to set the stage early on to establish who you are, to establish how you communicate, to establish what your company does, right? You have a window that is open, and that window shuts relatively quickly. So one of the things that I like to do early on with a customer to condition them into sort of how this is going to go is I will actually ask a question. So, you know, Mary, let's fast forward 6 months from now, and we are in, or maybe not 6 months, so let's fast forward 3 months from now, and we are in contract phase. And I'm assuming, procurement on your end will be involved. Sort of walk me through what I should be aware of from procurement perspective. And I actually will tell them what I'm getting at. I'll say, what I'm actually getting at is, I'd love to know, when you and I are in like procurement hell, what are the things that we both need to be aware of and can prepare ourselves for right now, so that it's less stressful for both of us when we go there? And what you're doing, and procurement is just an example of one of many different kind of topics that you could fast forward to. But you're doing way more than just sort of getting, like, picking up the bed sheets and looking under to see what's underneath there. What you're doing is you're conditioning the prospect that this is how this is going to go, right? And that's really critical early on in the sales call, is to establish that kind of level playing field, as I've mentioned before. And that this is, you're going to ask those uncomfortable questions, right? You're going to make those uncomfortable statements. You're going to put them in a position where they actually have to think ahead. And maybe the answer is, I don't know. And that's fine. And I'm okay with that. But I would for sure rather them say, I don't know, than not ask the question at all. Because at least that gives me intel that I might not be dealing with the right person. I'm going to have to do some due diligence on my own, right? Like, anything's better than nothing.
I agree. And I like, you know, you say start from the beginning. Katie asks how early, or Kate, I'm sorry, in the chat. Yeah, I think like the earlier, the better. And Tom brought up some good ways of like that beginning conversation, just how you set it up, Tom, how you were saying like, this might go well, this might, you know, you might not be interested in this, just let me know. And then Megan's talking about like further down the sales cycle. So if you show up over and over and over again, and they always know that you're going to push a little bit more, they're ready for that whenever the time comes. And then whenever, if they ghost you at that point, but it happens, right? Things come up, people have different priorities. You're in a much better position to ask the hard questions because they know that you're already there asking them the hard questions. Tom brought up mutual action plan, and I got a DM about mutual action plan, setting up a calendar, basically. So you're saying, here's the steps that it takes for us to get from point A to point B. I think about it like, do you guys work off your calendar? Like, if it's on my calendar, it's happening. It's like Anchorman with the teleprompter where he reads every single word on the teleprompter. That's me with my calendar. I don't know if it's showing up, like that's what I'm doing right now. So I think about that with our prospects, and like Tom was talking about having this plan and asking them if they can commit to all of these things. If you have an agreed upon plan and you talk about it while you're on the phone with each other, it makes it so much easier to go back, like Megan was saying, and like, hey, you said this was happening. I'm confused.
I mean, I love a calendar. I love a calendar. But I will say one thing, a really good move that I've done in the past that has worked is like, let's say you're ending a call and you're trying to set that mutual action plan and you're going through next steps and you're settling on dates. And let's say the prospect says to you, yeah, why don't you follow up with me in, you know, early next week or something like that. If you know, as a salesperson at your company, if you know that that's probably not realistic for him or her to digest all the information that you just had, don't be afraid to push back and say, you know what? Typically, from my past experience, it takes, you know, a little bit of time for you to get your folks aligned. So instead of setting a meeting, probably that's a little bit too early and we might not make, let's look at a more realistic date. And I know some people are cringing on here going, God, you're elongating the sales cycle. They said that they were going to, you know, meet early. Why wouldn't you jump on that? I'm not a betting girl, although I am. And I would bet you all the money that you'd most likely get that person ghosting you if you put the meeting on the calendar too early than actually giving them time to digest it and what is a reasonable time frame for them to gather what they need to gather or do what they need to do in order to have the information ready for that call.
Okay.
Can I like lovingly challenge you on that?
You may lovingly challenge me. You don't even feel lovingly. You can just challenge me.
Yeah, she's direct.
I like to do
your audience.
I feel like I agree with you in some cases. I do think that it's a little subjective. But like, if you're doing discovery and you know that this is a problem that needs to get solved in 3 months, then yeah, and it's a big enterprise deal and we're working on $1 million project, then yeah, like you're going to need some time. You're going to need 20 stakeholders. But if you're selling something a little bit more transactional, a little bit more quick moving, and if your default as a rep, let's say you meet on a Wednesday and your default is always same time next week, when in reality, like you could meet the next day, and if they have urgency to get this done, then there's a compound effect in the positive or the negative of like, now I just like accelerated all my deals by 1 week per call. If I only need two calls for a close and like, maybe I'm selling something that's a little bit smaller. So if that's you on the line, then I would try to shrink the time frame. And if you're a big, if you're selling bigger deals, then you want to allow more space because the stakeholders, there's a lot more they need to get done when you're not in the room and all that type of stuff. So that would be my one challenge.
Yeah, I totally agree. 100%. I think it just depends on the size of the customer, where you're at in the sales cycle and what you feel comfortable doing. I'm always a big believer in not wasting anyone's time. That's always my biggest thing is if I don't need a meeting to have a meeting, about the thing that I sent about the meeting, I really would prefer not to. I think people get really nervous about a longer sales cycle. A lot of sales leaders are very, look at sales cycles very in depth and how long it takes and stuff like that. And, I believe that is an important measurement, but I get very nervous when you give up the quality of the types of meetings that you're having versus just the quantity of the meetings that you're having and what that takes to close a deal.
Agreed.
If anyone has questions, you can stick them in the Q&A section at the bottom of the Slack where all of the nice little I don't know, buttons, where all those buttons are. And let us know. You can also upvote other people's questions in the Q&A section by clicking that nice little thumbs up, and we will answer those first. I do want to just quickly touch before we jump into that on knowing when to walk away. You know, we asked everyone here, and actually, let's see where our answers were for the poll, but we asked everyone here where they were, and it was in the, I know, pretty close. It was in the 3 to 10 touch range. When do you know when it's just like, okay, Tom, like when are you like, I'm good. I can step aside from this for a little bit.
In terms of how many touches?
Touches, but just like, when is that feeling for you or that moment for you where you're just like, okay, like I'm going to either put this on this back burner for now, or like, this isn't a good fit and it's not worth my time.
Yeah. Yeah, it feels a little bit more subjective. Like, you know, I mentioned like I might have 5 or so touches over a couple of weeks. But it's kind of a feeling like if you can, we had this thing at Gong that in order to, if you were on a forecast call and you didn't have both a next step already on the calendar and a very specific, we called it the logo slide, that you could show the specific pain and priorities from that company that was so specific that you could put their logo on it. It wasn't just like, we need more revenue. It was like the details of that company. And if you didn't have those two things, you didn't really have a deal. Hmm. And so I would probably try to take a step back objectively at my couple deals I'm getting ghosted on and say like, do I really have something like really, really specific with these people? Or do we just have like a nice chat and then I haven't heard from them in 3 weeks? And if I can look at that, hopefully objectively, or maybe a friend or a manager can help like come with another pair of eyes, then I'll say, okay, I might need to put this one on the back burner. And, you know, I might try again later and really focus my time where there's momentum and things are actually happening.
Yeah. Awesome. I did Danny in the Q&A section, and for everyone here, this is being recorded. You can access all of our previous shows at sellbetter.xyz. You go to on-demand shows. You will also get this emailed to you since you're all here. So you'll see that pop up in your inbox probably tomorrow. Steven asks if we should stay away from opening phrases like, I hope your week is going well. If you're doing that, how do you feel like you should start a message? Like, how are you opening things up? What's an alternative to just jumping into the meeting or jumping into the meat of your message?
I would just get right into what's it about. So like if I was looking for if I hadn't heard back around, a next step call that we were going to have, I would just say, hey, Megan, no, we talked about X as our next, like, I just wouldn't have a sentence before what am I actually reaching out about. It'd say, no, we said that we're going to talk again on Friday. Haven't heard from you in a week. You mentioned that XYZ was a main priority. Is that something you're still trying to solve? You know, that might be the entirety of my message.
Megan, I know you chimed in with a couple earlier. Anything else you would just jump in?
Yeah, I would jump in and again, like the direct card of stating said value, or even if it was like a very, like, I guess as specific as humanly possible. So let's plug Gong again, because we use Gong at TestFit. In fact, it was the first thing that I put in place when I started. It was a necessity. And one of the things that from a perspective when I'm looking at calls and I'm going through calls is, you know, how much small talk there is. I know we're talking, I switched subjects. Now we're talking about like being on a call, but I'm also looking at like the emails and understanding, you know, what's being tracked and all that kind of stuff. Being direct and making sure that you get to the point and going back into Gong if you need to and finding like a very specific quote or something that they said or whatever. Like, I love a searchable transcript on Gong. I will oftentimes go in there and literally pull it out and put it into the email in quotation marks. Because listen, it's their words, right? Like, they did it, and talk about an attention grabber. I mean, the fact that I like if I'm on the receiving end of that email and I'm looking at that and the salesperson had gone in and been able to quote back to me what I said during a call, I'm paying attention, right? Like that shows me that there's definitely some, like, there's some interest here. There's some pursuit on their part. Like this is a different level game. So if you don't use something like Gong or whatever, and you have a really good note-taking capability, like take down direct quotes and use them in your follow-up. That will be a fantastic way to get their attention as you go about the sales process.
Okay, I want to get through a couple more of these real quick. Lois asks, maybe they're getting bids and they say that they're going to take the lowest bid, but they don't want to tell you what it is. Is there a way that you handle this, especially if you're not typically the cheapest? Lois, been there.
Been there. Yeah, this goes back to the uncomfortable conversations. Sounds like you're not going, if you don't do anything, it sounds like you're going to put your bid in, you're not going to be the cheapest, and you're not going to win the deal anyways, right? So you might as well try something different. I had a job where I was doing all these RFPs and we'd never win because we were the most expensive. So I'd pick up the phone and I'd call whoever sent me that bid or RFP or whatever and try to understand what is the decision criteria, what is driving that project. And I'd even call out and say, hey, Leslie, I'll be honest with you, I'm happy to send a bid. We're never the cheapest because of XYZ, because of our quality and this, like, you know, is there any opportunity to share why we're different and why it might be worth considering someone that isn't the cheapest to help you, that's actually going to help you achieve your goals? If they say, no, we just want the cheapest, then you just saved yourself an hour. And if you might be able to shape how they're actually viewing that project.
Yeah.
And deep pull out, don't bid.
Yeah. And if you're selling into government, any kind of government organization or anything like that, this is your life. This is how this rolls. One reason why I would never sell into government organizations unless I absolutely have to. And it is what it is, but you have to have pride in your product, and you have to have confidence in the value that you bring to organizations. If you, as a salesperson, don't have those two things, you probably shouldn't be selling the product, in my opinion. And so let that be something that can help you have those tough conversations when they're looking for the cheapest. All right, that's totally fair. And I understand that. Heads up, we typically don't come in at the cheapest. And there's many reasons why that is. I might not even share them at that point. I might not even go through that. I may just have enough by saying, you know what, like, we offer and bring a lot to the table. If this is something that you're interested, I would be more than happy to get on a phone with you, and talk through what that looks like. But heads up, before we waste each other's time, typically in the past, we do not come in at the lowest price point.
Yeah.
Hugs and kisses, Megan.
Hugs and kisses. Love you lots. I mean, if you're missing the chat, it's also all about cheesy gordita crunch. I mean, shit goes right hand in hand with leap day. I mean, that should be a traditional leap day meal. You guys, this has been awesome. Thank you so much for all of your insights and all of this information. You will get the recording, everyone. Tomorrow's show is me again. So come hang out with me. Ooh. We're going to be talking about exploring prospecting sequences and how you can, it's kind of a little debate. We're going to have a little heated debate between Jed Marley and Anthony Natoli tomorrow. So come check us out. Also, we are dropping LinkedIn for Megan, Tom, and myself in the chat so that you can connect with us. I know there's a couple of people who didn't get questions answered, and I know all three of us would be happy to ping you back when we get a second. So come chat with us, and we look forward to seeing you next time. Again, thank you guys so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
Had a blast. Thanks, everyone.
Bye. Thanks.